Hello everyone, I'm Tom Denford, co-founder of ID Comms. Welcome to episode 24 of Media Snack Meets. Recorded each week in New York, we get to meet the individuals and organizations doing great work to inspire success and drive change within the global media and marketing industry. In each episode, we find out what is behind that success, what it takes to make change in the industry, and what the rest of us can learn from that experience. My guest for this episode is Fred Schoenberg, the founder of Venture Fuel. And Fred is a curator of marketing innovation. His company helps major advertisers discover innovative technologies that unlock growth. Now, we talk a lot on Media Snack about how marketers are busy and how they might be able to find it hard to find the time to investigate all the different options available to them, how to separate the wheat from the chaff or the fact from the fiction. And this is hard, and especially so when needing to sift through the thousands of technologies available and the many startups vying for their attention. Most could be a waste of time, but how do you find the diamond in the rough? Well, this is exactly Fred's mission. He's helping his clients quickly identify partner companies to provide innovation in operations and marketing. And it's understandable then why Fred calls himself the marketer's secret weapon. He's a regular at CES and South by Southwest and Advertising Week, etc. And he's often bringing with him innovative startup companies to meet with and inspire marketers with new possibilities. In this episode, Fred explains how he identifies the right tech companies that are worthwhile for his clients and the impact that having an innovation agenda can have on their business. He also tells us why Ford didn't buy Uber. You can check the full show notes for this episode at mediasnackpodcast.com. So without further delay, please enjoy this highly insightful interview with Fred Schoenberg. Hi, Fred. Welcome to Media Snack Meets.
Hey, Tom. Thanks so much for having me.
Good. Now, it's taken us a little while to schedule this. I'm really excited to be talking today just about innovation. So tell me, in your mind, what is innovation and why is that important to business?
I think innovation is anything that can help you grow your business or deliver value substantially differently than the way you're currently operating. So Coca-Cola made famous the sort of 70-20-10 approach where, you know, 70 is now, 20 is sort of, you know, what's about to pop, and the 10% is that forward-thinking innovation. We look at innovation as something that is a competitive advantage, that can be new technology, but it's really, it's new thinking, and it's a way of attacking a problem differently than it has been attacked by that organization in the past. So it can be tech, it can be experiences, it can be a lot of different things.
And is that critical now for business success? It maybe feels a bit like a cliche if we kind of say that it's all about innovation. But I mean, how important is it now for businesses to be seeking innovation in their categories and in their marketing?
Yeah, I think it's more important now than ever. But you're absolutely right. The word innovation is terribly overused. And as is disruption and now transformation. Also, those three are being used just about in any context possible. To me, this is the most important time to be innovating. You see sort of all the things that are happening to the Fortune 500, right? There's some stats out there. The 50% of the Fortune 500 has disappeared since 2000. Yet, you know, throughout that same time period, the brands that are considered most innovative are outperforming the S&P 500 by 200%. So it's this moment of sort of, you could call it disrupt or be disrupted or innovate or, you know, seek irrelevancy. It's a really interesting time where tried and true isn't delivering results. And you can look at things like Kraft Heinz, and there are sort of challenges around, you know, writing down $15+ billion or all the stores that are closing at the Gap and Victoria's Secret. What's been working isn't working quite the way it was because of consumer changes. And some of that's driven by technology. So I think the idea of innovating and really be able to move at the speed of the consumer is more important now than it ever has been.
Yeah, I want to dig into that. There's just the difference between, well, the challenges of big companies. You've listed here some, you know, some big organizations that are in very high profile, visible ways, really failing, perhaps, maybe because they just didn't innovate, or they maybe got lazy, or what, you know, whatever it is that's caused the downfall. We'll come to some specific examples. Obviously, the innovation is something that clearly is one of your passions, as I said in the introduction. What, just explain to me now then, what is Venture Fuel? So this is your company that helps organizations in innovation. So what kind of, what led you to that, and what kind of work are you doing?
Yeah, I love it. So I launched the company 5 years ago. And really the reason behind it was, as I was working with brands in my past life, they kept asking, what's next? We need to do something new. We need to do something different. We want to push the envelope. Yet they all felt really overwhelmed by what's next. There are 2 million startups that launch every year. There's no way you can make sense of 2 million different companies. And they're all emailing and bombarding the marketing director or even the VP of innovation. And it's really hard to make sense of that and kind of separate the wheat from the chaff and find what's going to work for your organization. So that's why I wanted to start the company, was I felt, and I'll give you sort of the name of it. I felt that new ventures would be able to fuel the growth of established companies. And I saw it in my own life and business when we would work with a startup or an emerging technology company. They're so hungry to grow. They're going to work harder to ensure success than when you go with, you know, a monster established company that might have scale, but it's not personalized. They don't have a founder that's living, breathing, sweating the results of this particular campaign. So I started to see sort of the reverse idea. A lot of people say, oh, well, startups fail all the time. I was seeing the opposite, where startups were working, you know, 10x as hard as the established players because they really valued my business. And it was giving me a competitive advantage. And so that was the idea, was could we take a business challenge of an established company and go out and find a startup or a new technology that could solve that problem in a new way and give them a competitive advantage?
How does that work? Because you're focusing on providing a service for marketers. Where does it start?
It starts with a problem. It starts, or a challenge or an opportunity, right? So we'll sit and maybe the idea is, and I'll make one up. A brand says, let's say a sports team. We have a great fan base, but they're getting older. And we know that the younger generation isn't coming to the stadium as frequently. What's the future of the fan experience? How can we re-engage the younger consumers and get them to love the team and be as passionate as their parents or grandparents? And so there's a lot of technologies there that can make that experience unique and different, more shareable, allow the sort of connection between online and offline. But where do you even start, right? Like it's such a daunting thing to consider. And so our process is, we'll kind of identify what those pain points are. We then go out, we've built a network of over 500 investors, and that's ranging from VCs to angel investors, so very early stage investors. And we say, hey, this is what we're trying to solve. Are there companies you've invested in or companies that you've seen that you think can solve this problem? And they, of course, they share it with us because, you know, we have the opportunity for their investment to then work with this monster, you know, sports team in this example. So it's good for their investment. But we're totally independent. So if you're a big VC, Tom, and you send me a cool future fan experience startup, I'm not obligated to go show that to the client. I'll take it into consideration, but I may look at Bob's VC or Sarah's investment. And so we're able to then vet through the best options and provide only the ones that are going to deliver for that particular client.
That's good. I'm just imagining the amount of sales pitches and these sales decks that you must see. How do you, talk about like 2 million, you said 2 million startups. How do you even begin to sift through that and identify the kind of things that might be relevant to the brands that you work with?
It's I'll use a marketing example. It's sort of like going shopping for soup. Right, you go in the soup aisle and it's overwhelming. There's, you know, hundreds of different SKUs of soup. 70% of those you're not interested in. So that's usually the way it starts, is, you know, we'll get a huge amount that come in for whatever the particular challenge is, and 70% of them just don't fit, whether they're too early stage, they're not the right vibe, whatever it might be. And so it's really, we're able to get it down to that next level fairly quickly because we've been doing this for a long time. And then it's really about vetting them. So we put them through a little bit of an evaluation matrix that we've developed that looks at, you know, where they are in funding, have they worked with corporates before, do they have any case studies, what is the growth potential? So we really just edit through it and can get down to what's right for that particular brand. And you're right, it's a daunting process, but my sort of point of view and our company point of view is that's what we do so that the brand doesn't need to do that work of just going through the pitch decks and going through it. And what's amazing is with startups is you have some people that are unbelievably charismatic, but their tech isn't that good. And more likely than not, the other is true where they're not charismatic. Their deck is terrible, but they've got an unbelievable product that can solve a particular problem. And they just haven't been able to get in front of the right person or can't explain it well. So we have to really kind of train ourselves to look at what the real product is and not be swayed by, I'll call it the magic or innovation tourism. But it's fun, Tom, it's fun. Like all day I get to see what's next.
And do you offer advisory to these startups? Presumably you'd be a very good source of advice for them, if particularly if they've got businesses where they've got a business model reliant on advertising or marketing partnerships.
Yeah, it's interesting. I when I first started the company, that was the business model. That we would work for the startup and we would help get their pitch ready and almost be business development for them. But what we found was then we just became a sales team and we were, whatever was in our portfolio, we would push that on the brands. We tried to be agnostic, but it was hard. And so we decided to divest ourselves of any sort of equity with any of these startups. So we don't help them officially, right? The company doesn't advise or take a percentage of the companies or do anything like that. We end up coaching them when we think that they're the right fit for a brand. We'll help them understand, hey, you don't need a 55-page deck. Let's bring it down. And then we actually will help the brand execute on the program. So we end up doing a lot of coaching, but it's always from the brand lens because there was really nobody in the startup ecosystem that was focused on the established company. Everybody was on the other side of like, oh, we'll help you get your pitch right, or we'll get you meetings, all of which are very relevant and something we're capable of. But to me, it was more about what these startups, the real ones, what they really need is deals. And that's what the corporations want, is to make things happen. So we focus on the corporate side of it.
So, I mean, anyone that is listening that is in a startup, though, that feels like they could be a candidate for this, what should they be doing? What could they be thinking about to appeal to marketers? When you see businesses and you think, oh, that, you know, they're great. They've got, as you said, like a great idea and the great charisma and a good leadership and all these kind of things. How do you make the most of that to appeal to marketers? How can a startup owner or leadership team make themselves more attractive to a marketing leader?
It's a challenging question, and you're right. For startups, what we tell them when we work with them is, what's the problem that you are trying to solve? Like, why did you start the company? Why did you quit your day job and go off and, you know, kind of risk your paycheck to create this business? What is the why behind it? And once you kind of have that down, it becomes a lot easier to understand which brands can benefit from that why. And so it's a little bit of reverse engineering, but you start to think, okay, you know, maybe it's you've created a dynamic creative optimization play, right? So you can take one beautiful piece of video and chop it up and personalize it at scale. That obviously would work for tons and tons of brands. But you have to start thinking, okay, which brands and why? And is that, Who should I talk to at those brands and really just showing what value you deliver? I think the biggest mistake startup founders make is they're so obsessed with their idea, they end up just talking about themselves over and over and over and not thinking about it from the other side of the table, which is what problem can you solve? Why should, you know, Microsoft write you a check rather than Google? One of the things that's hard for a lot of early stage companies is they don't understand how much competition there is for a marketer's dollars, right? You know, ESPN is fighting with Sports Illustrated, which is fighting with, you know, Google and Facebook and all these people for every dollar. And so as a startup, you're coming in with no name recognition, definitely less scale than that. So you have to be really compelling with why someone should take the time to point a couple dollars in your direction. But if you can solve their problem, then you're in the driver's seat. So it's really thinking through why you started the company, what problem it solves, and then aligning that with what brands it would solve the problem for.
Whenever we've worked with any kind of startup business, it's sometimes a revelation to them that advertising dollars don't flow perfectly through the system. You know, maybe there's less so these days, but going back to kind of 10 years or so, a load of startups were just based on this, on a pure ad funded model, right? There were loads of businesses saying, well, listen, we're just going to build this thing. We'll build an audience and then we'll naturally just attract advertising dollars because we've got an audience. But ad dollars don't flow through the system in such a logical way. You don't get your proportion of total attention in dollar terms because there's many, many gates in between. You know, marketing decision-making is not always the most rational always. And there's also lots of people in between that touch the money, right? They have to be more innovative now and perhaps more entrepreneurial, how to appeal to marketers and solve problems, not just attract dollars.
Well, it's funny if you think about it, and I know you work with lots of very interesting brands, like very rarely is their challenge, how can I get more scale, right? Where I've got all this money, what eyeballs, where can I get more eyeballs? Like nobody has a scale problem anymore. So the idea of like, oh, I can get lots of eyeballs and then I'm going to make a fortune. You need to have the right eyeballs or a unique niche of eyeballs or a reason why your eyeballs are more valuable than all the different other options that every advertiser has. And to your point, there are so many different ways to be bought and people in between the decision maker and the actual execution that it's very challenging both for the marketer and also the startup to figure out where they fit in the equation and to make things happen. And I think that's why, it's why we exist, but it's also a challenge because, you know, if you're a startup, you're not popping up on any programmatic buys out of the gate. So you need to go kind of shake the tree and get exposure to that brand where you are a unique solution.
When it works really well, because you must see, you know, you try and mitigate the failures, I guess, by doing really good screening. Where it works well, what happens? You know, what is created when you take a big company that you might work with and you partner them with a startup? What happens?
Yeah, it's a couple things. From a pure ROI perspective, they see magic in some cases. It's the only place you can get magic, right? You're not, I guess you could invest on a TV channel and have a breakaway hit show. And all of a sudden you're sort of really glad you were there. But for the most part, a lot of that is negotiated up front. Whereas with a startup, when we helped launch, like say the Museum of Ice Cream in New York, you know, that was a pop-up experience that became a cultural zeitgeist. The brands that got involved with that, like it was like up there as their best investment of the year. And they did not invest a lot because it was such an early new concept. We're able to do unique things that give that brand a competitive advantage outside of that, right? So there have been several companies that have looked for ways to conquest their competitors using technology. And all of a sudden, their competitors are spending $1 million to be the official sponsor of XYZ. And, you know, our client is able to kind of conquest that buy for a sliver of that investment. You know, what I think is cool is that this has the innovation, air quotes around it, has the opportunity to deliver really outsized results. I think it also has the ability to inject enthusiasm throughout the organization. People want to do new, different campaigns. They want to work on that. It creates an excitement internally. It's almost like an HR move because you start to do cool new things. It makes your company feel relevant. It makes it feel, you know, cutting edge and modern. And that increases sort of the employee satisfaction. So there's all these sort of like secondary benefits to it that I always say, look, that's a nice to have. Like I'm in business, not for the cherry on top of the sundae. Like we're here to make money for the brand and deliver results. But it's fun. I mean, people love working on this. And then to have your breakthrough magical moments, you know, that's the stuff that ends up in all the trades. And then you start getting into the whole earned media side of things, which this stuff is built for. Press wants to talk about new and different. So there's a lot of sort of secondary benefits to it. But we always look at it as, can we deliver good ROI? And I think you can. And there's a bad rap, right, that so many startups fail, and they do. And some of them are really bad ideas that shouldn't have started. But a lot of them can go beyond delivering what the brand invests with them for a campaign, for a partnership, regardless of what their long-term, you know, they're not going to become a unicorn, but they can deliver a B2B campaign at 5x what you would have gotten from a traditional player.
How do you find the marketers that need your help? Because, I mean, you go to any marketing conference these days, there's going to be some segment about broad innovation, or it's about how to, you know, engage internal stakeholders to get excited about marketing again. Do we keep doing the same thing, but just add the cherry on top? Do they find you? Where do you go and hunt and identify people that have got this challenge?
We're looking at their businesses in some cases where we're looking for problems. One thing that's interesting is we see a lot of startups on the way up, so we can see some disruption. We can kind of trend spot that ahead of time. And when you start to see, you know, all these direct-to-consumer food brands, you know, it's a good time to start calling all the big CPGs. So we do some of that. What's interesting is 85% of our business comes from referrals from existing clients. And that is literally just someone that we've worked with saying, this is awesome. Talk to my friend from business school. Or I used to work over at this company. You guys helped me so much. I want to put them in touch. So that's a little bit of an old school way to drum up business. We also get a lot of clients that have tried different innovation programs and they haven't worked. There's a lot of, and I'll call it innovation tourism, this idea of we can go to CES and walk the floor and now we've innovated, right? And we went and looked at the autonomous toothbrush company. And it's like, what? No, that's not innovation. Like, this should be solving a business problem. But people will go out to Silicon Valley for a 2-day, you know, seminar with a big VC and feel like they've checked the box. So we tend to get a lot of calls from people that have done that and realize they haven't seen results and that their competitors have done cool things. So it's hard. I mean, you nailed this whole thing out of the gate with your question of like, what does innovation mean? And it's a buzzword. So it gets used everywhere and misused. So it's a little bit hard to make the case for what the true value is for it. Everyone knows they need to be doing it, but they're not 100% sure how to approach it. So it tends to be word of mouth.
You're listening to Media Snack Meets podcast from ID Comms. This is episode 24. So Fred, I want to come on and talk about in a minute your advice for marketers that are listening, right? How to get into this space if this is something that they're thinking about with their teams and their organization. But first, I just want to pick up something that you mentioned right at the beginning, because you were suggesting names of some kind of big companies that might have very visibly and publicly stumbled in their success. I think you mentioned Kraft Heinz is a very recent one, but there's some high profile retail businesses that have either closed or closing or really struggling. Sears is probably one of the most well known over here in the US recently. It strikes me, you know, and there's a lot of narrative around the struggles of these businesses, and lots of people saying they took their eye off the ball, they didn't observe their customer, you know, they didn't innovate. It's really hard, right, in these big companies. How big companies just don't see, you know, they don't see the threat. How can they avoid the falling off the cliff like some of these companies seem to be doing?
You know what's interesting is I think they actually do see the threat. I think that they spend a tremendous amount of money on consumer research. They are watching things in the marketplace. It's their ability to react to the threat or know how to react to it that I think is maybe a little bit slow. And there's all sorts of great stories about, you know, sort of Blockbuster launching some version of Netflix. It was just too late. And Sears is another one that was started to get into sort of e-commerce, but, you know, not fast enough. What we see is a little bit of a knee-jerk reaction that I think is a big misstep. And that is when they feel the heat, right? You start to see these direct-to-consumer brands coming up and nibbling at market share or fundamental business model innovation. If you think of like an Airbnb and what that did to the hotel industry, you sort of have this moment where you can either join them, right? So you can try and imagine the Airbnb model or fight it or come up with something else. And what's interesting is I think so many big companies are, they have this knee-jerk reaction of, oh, we need to innovate now. And they end up spending a tremendous amount of money buying somebody. They acquire some business. They overvalue it to show their board and Wall Street that they are innovating. They create a corporate venturing fund, right? They put $100 million behind. They're going to invest in startups, which I think is great. I think it's one leg of the tripod that they should put money into. Or they try and start like an accelerator. And all those things are good, but they're not the core business of any of the companies you mentioned. And I think they need to go into it knowing, just like they shouldn't start their own social agency, that they're not investors, and they shouldn't start an accelerator or a VC without understanding what that business is. You know, an accelerator, it's going to take 5 years to 7 years to see any results from your investment. So, and the CMO lifespan is 2 years. So you're going to put $1 million into creating an accelerator that you're not going to see the returns on. And so I think that there's this, oh, we need to innovate. Let's do something big and splashy, rather than taking a deep breath and going, how do we inject innovation throughout the organization, right? Every single marketing plan, put 50 to 100 grand into that to do something new that's right for that brand launch. That type of innovation, and then when it works, right, then you spray it across your portfolio, you globalize it, you go big with your winners.
I can kind of sympathize with the marketer, right? As you said, you know, the tenure of marketers or the churn of marketers within organizations is, as you know, notoriously low in terms of timing, right? People, whether they're moving every couple of years. And yet these are long-term plays, lots of these kind of things. You know, these kind of deep innovation partnerships, you could understand why marketers do pass on that and think, well, you know, I'm investing in the long term. I may not get to see this through. Also, looks like it might carry a high risk, and is it a distraction, and all these kind of things. And so perhaps it's, you know, it's more the board level. You know, perhaps there's more kind of strategy, corporate strategy, I guess, where that start to get kind of interested in these bigger things. But I guess for a marketer, this could be it's a good way of elevating yourself out of marketing, or, you know, above marketing, if you like, bring your marketing sensibilities, but bring these corporate partnerships to your C-suite. It's a good investment in your own career, potentially. I could see that, right? Getting excited about bringing innovative partnerships to a kind of corporate strategy level.
We keep joking that we want to like put on our website, but it just doesn't feel right, that everyone that works with us gets promoted. It's like a crazy number. It's like 90% of the people that were our lead contact last year got promoted by the end of the year. And the reason is what you're doing is going to get press. It's going to get buzz, whether that's internal or external, because it's new, different, it's creative thinking, which of course applies beyond marketing. And I think the problem with, I'll call it the longer term, let's call it corporate venturing, right? If you launch a corporate VC fund, that has to be the board level, because that is a 5 to 15 year return on investment. And it's really important, but I don't think that's the only place that people should be investing their time and their dollars. I think every single brand launch, you should be injecting innovation into it. And that's the way you're going to learn, and you're going to get exposure to what else is happening, which is going to keep you a step ahead of everybody. And so it's sort of this ability to do both the short term and the long term in this space that is is I think what helps you avoid disruption, because you start to explore these different pockets of your consumer quickly and with speed before and with a startup, rather than wait for that startup to have so much momentum that they don't need you. And then they go get VC dollars and now you're in trouble. Now you have a competitor you didn't see coming.
Do you advocate that companies just partner, or are they sometimes looking for acquisition? And I'm in my mind, you know, thinking in these famous examples, right? People say, well, Ford should have bought Uber like early on, right? That would have made sense. Just acquire that, you know, Hilton should have bought Airbnb. And obviously those things didn't happen. And so in some cases, you know, the car company tries to build its own like ride sharing app or something and it just fails. Is this a territory where it's acquisition? Because at the same time, I can imagine if Ford had bought Uber, Uber probably wouldn't exist anymore, right? They would have ruined it. Is acquisition the key, or is it better that these two partners stay separate and figure out how they could find, you know, mutual value?
So I think it's really interesting. We'll play out the Ford Uber example because it's fun. I think Ford should have talked to Uber before Uber was up for sale. So early stage, Uber is just launching. They're, you know, sort of doing the black car version, right? The sort of limo on demand, which is how they started. As soon as that started gaining traction, someone from Ford should have partnered with Uber and said, "Hey, we'll help your drivers." Whether that's providing, you know, whatever the fancy Ford is, thinking of some way to give a benefit to drivers that have Ford for using it, and get in good with Uber early when Uber needed it, right? Uber, like out of the gate, they were like any startup. They're trying to find drivers. The biggest cost is the car. How do we do this? You know, they could have figured out all sorts of ways to partner together and done a big press release with Uber. That's where they should have first gotten involved together, is when Uber was on the sort of upswing and early, but still struggling. Once Uber started getting traction and got VC dollars, Uber didn't need Ford. At that point, it would have cost Ford so much money to get involved that I'm not sure it would have been the right play. But I believe that you should date before you get married. And there's an opportunity early on here to partner with startups, to write a very modest check, get value out of that check, regardless of what happens. But then you know the founder, and now you're working together. And when they go to raise money, they're going to call you, and you're going to be right there. And so they could have gotten in on that first round of investments, and Uber would have been running around town talking about their Ford partnership. So to me, it's acquisition is an expensive piece of this. I would go earlier. I would try and find those companies on the way up, figure out how to work with them, how to get your brand in there, partner with them, learn from them. That's where you're going to see a huge return on investment without blowing hundreds of millions of dollars. Not to say that that's not a good investment down the road, but I think out of the gate, there's a lot of ways to experiment with new tech, new startups, and get involved before it becomes cost prohibitive.
I think that's really helpful. I think that, you know, your Ford Uber example, I guess, is at the kind of crux of what you do, right? Because you're saying to Ford, look, you know, maybe that was a missed opportunity, or this is where you should have done it, but let's find you those next opportunities.
Absolutely. And it's crazy, right? That you wait a couple of years and all of a sudden it costs $100 million. And it's, you know, the math is pretty simple. It's like 2 years earlier, you could have done a campaign and got involved with them for $50,000, $100,000, that now you're partners. Now you're working together, and you don't have investment in them, but you have first look at it. That's our whole model, is we think that there is so much happening that can provide a return on investment immediately, in terms of just like any other marketing campaign, but also you get that value of seeing what's coming next, getting in front of it, protecting yourself from disruption, and also enabling yourself to become a growth partner with that particular company.
Good. Right. So let's come on to the big question, which is, what's your advice for marketers? So this is a big area. Maybe they're nervous. Maybe they've experimented in this kind of arena before. For marketers that are listening, what's the start point of this? If you say that, you know, if maybe they've wasted time walking the floors at CES, think they've done a bit of innovation because they've done some, you know, wacky media executions or tech partnerships or something, what do they need to start thinking about now?
I think the first start point is what challenge is right in front of you? What is the iceberg that you're looking at that you have to navigate around today?
And so you mean like a business challenge, right?
Business
that you're trying
challenge.
To solve, is that what you're talking about?
I'm trying to sell more beer in convenience stores.
Yeah.
Right? Like it can be that sort of traditional or that simple. And instead of saying, okay, let's do the same things we've done and do more of it or tweak it just a little bit, see what else is out there. Are there ways to use technology to make that space come alive? Are there ways to drive consumers into that space? What's happening globally in that space? And I think really just taking a minute and thinking about one of the challenges that you have, and let's see, you know, like we can do a quick intro call with somebody. It's very rare that we say, no, we can't find a solution to that. But from there, you do one test, see if it works. You know, like you see these like VPs of marketing, you're like, what are you doing? Oh, well, I'm mentoring startups 4 hours a week. It's like, why would you be doing that? Like, that's not your KPI. It's fun, but that's not going to deliver results if you're trying to sell more mayonnaise, right? Like you should be working on your core business and then have someone bring into you three breakthrough ideas to sell more mayonnaise. And then you choose which one's going to work. So I think it's simplifying it, really focusing on your business, and not trying to boil the ocean, right? Like I want to see every startup at CES. Like there's five startups out of the 1,000 at Eureka Park at CES that make sense for any one brand, tops. And it's like, why not just have those five come to your headquarters?
Because I love the idea that technology and innovation should sell mayonnaise, because it could absolutely apply to anything. Okay, so before we go, I want to ask you just to look ahead, which I guess you spend most of your time doing, right? You're kind of wrapped in this idea of innovation and change. But what would you like to see happen across the next 12 months? What change would make you happy?
I would love to see marketers go from innovation tourism, the sort of idea of seeing, you know, looking at startups like they're, you know, animals in a zoo. I'd like to see them instead start to test and learn, do that more rapidly, because I think there's an opportunity to lasso a rocket ship and really transform a brand. And I think that's the key, is just start to try more things in smaller bites and see the return on investment and do some amazing work.
Fred Schoenberg, founder of Venture Fuel, thank you.
Thank you, Tom. It's been a pleasure.
Who would you like to meet on future episodes? Please let us know at mediasnackpodcast.com, where you will also find previous guests, including leading media executives from companies like P&G, L'Oreal, Mars, and many more. Plus some of the industry's most provocative thought leaders, people like Professor Mark Ritson and Gary Vaynerchuk. You can subscribe to get new episodes each week, and if you liked this episode and you think somebody else would, then please do share it. Thank you so much for listening.